Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Page A3, OAOA.com. Local news roundup. Early voting. Early voting for the runoff election is scheduled from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Wednesday and 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday and Friday. Locations for early voting include the Ector County Courthouse Annex, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium. Westlake Hardware is not a location. City of Odessa residents who live in Midland County must vote at the Midland County Annex Courtroom, 2110 North A Street in Midland, for early voting, and then at Odessa Country Club, No. 1 Fairway Drive, on Election Day. Election Day locations in Odessa will include the Global Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium. Voting hours will be 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Medical panel discussion. Star Hospice Educational Services has scheduled an expert medical panel discussion. COVID-19 Series No. 2, Pulmonary Critical and Intensive Care, Causes and Concerns, from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. today, live stream on Star Hospice Facebook. Moderator will be Pat Caney. Panel experts include Dr. Anand Reddy, Dr. Gerardo M. Catalasan, Dr. Kavar J. Dar, Dr. Alexander Bastidas, and Dr. Alejandra Garcia Fernandez. None of the panelists are associated with Star Hospice financially. The information provided during this discussion is not intended nor implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice. It is provided for educational purposes only for general public. Visit tinyur.com/Y6H58B63. Virtual Town Hall Meeting. State Senator Kel Seliger has scheduled a virtual town hall meeting at 1:15 p.m. December 10th. Registration deadline is today. Register at www.kelseliger.com/town-halls/. For more information, call the Odessa District Office at 550-7476. From Staff Reports. Hello, this is Kay, reading page A6, Odessa American, Tuesday, December 8th, 2020. Commissioners receive superintendent. Murray to review contribution for students' electronic devices. OA News at OAOA.com. Ector County Commissioners today will hear ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray's response to their recent donation of $270,523 in leftover Federal CARES Act money for the purchase of students' electronic devices and hotspots. In the 10 a.m. session in the County Administration Building at 1010 East 8th Street, Murray will review the significance of the additional 6,500 Chromebooks, 5,800 iPads, and 1,000 MiFi hotspots to the district's educational program. In other business, the court will consider naming Precinct 1 Commissioner-elect Mike Gardner to the board of the 911 Emergency Communication District for a 2-year term to replace Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers, who is leaving office at year end. It will also accept a $1,000 donation to the Sheriff's Office from Basin Abstract and Title. Other agenda items include reviewing a $198,465 amendment to the sales tax fund for the Sheriff's Office, hearing Judge Debbie Hayes' presentation on COVID-19 related matters, considering amending the Airport Board's bylaws to allow holding quarterly meetings on an as-needed basis, reviewing a memorandum of understanding with the Friends of Ector County Library, discussing the issuance of a certificate of substantial completion for roofing projects on county buildings, hearing Sheriff Mike Griffith's review of an agreement between the county and Securus Technologies, considering Health Department Director Brandy Garcia's request for a secretary's pay raise, considering final year-end line-item budget transfers and amendments, discussing a payment regarding a lease purchase contract with Johnson Controls. ECISD Board of Trustees to hear early childhood presentation. OANews@OAOA.com. The Ector County Independent School District Board of Trustees will hear presentations on schools of choice, early childhood education, and consider action on an amendment to the academic calendar for 2020-2021 during its workshop today. The meeting is set for 6 p.m. Tuesday in the boardroom of the Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. ECISD is taking steps to protect against the spread of COVID-19 with staff and in the community. Everyone is required to stop at the front desk, have their temperature taken, and answer screening questions prior to accessing building. Visitors are required to wear face masks. The mission of early childhood education is to teach, grow, and nurture each student in a positive and developmentally appropriate manner through a play-based curriculum to prepare all students to be emotionally, socially, and kindergarten ready, supplemental agenda material says. The district plans to serve 1,000 3-year-olds in pre-kindergarten next year, but it needs more capacity. Through Senate Bill 1882, the district could partner with child care already in operation to serve pre-K through 3-year-olds. The material says this benefits the operation through additional funding and benefits ECISD by expanding early childhood education. Kindergarten readiness predicts third grade success, the material states. In 2019 through 2020, 4-year-olds attended half-day pre-kindergarten. In 2020-21, 4-year-olds are attending full-day pre-kindergarten. For 2019-2020, there were 12 half-day pre-kindergarten campuses with 63 classrooms and 1,313 students. This school year, 2020-2021, there are 20 full-day campuses, 77 classrooms, and 1,264 students. Children eligible for pre-kindergarten must reside in Ector County, be 4 years old on or before September 1st, and must meet at least one of the following eligibility requirements developed by the state: language other than English, educationally disadvantaged, which means the student is eligible to participate in the National Free Lunch Program, the student is considered homeless, the parent is an active duty member of the military, including state military, or in a reserve component of the armed forces, or was killed or injured while serving on active duty. The child is in foster care. Is the child of a person eligible for the Star of Texas Award, such as a peace officer, the district website said. Of the 4-year-olds currently enrolled in ECISD, 80% are eligible and 20% are not. There are tuition options, district information details. On the first day of school, there were 980 students in pre-kindergarten. Today, there are 1,264. Today, 83% of those students, 1,055, are learning in person, and 17%, or 209 students, remotely. The presentation expected during the meeting shows that scores are higher from the pre-K circle test this year than last in reading and math. Through Senate Bill 1882, the district could partner with high-quality child care already in operation to serve pre-K through 3-year-olds. This benefits the operation through additional funding and benefits ECISD by expanding early childhood education. The goal is to provide early education to 1,000 students who are 3 years old. The potential partner could take access beyond ECISD walls. Seats would be filled at the ECISD Early Childhood Centers first. Authorized partners could be existing or new partners. After 3 years, they will reevaluate the partner organization. Pre-kindergarten, tinyurl.com/YXOZV4QH. On the net, tinyurl.com/Y6WAORGD. Local news roundup. Teen charged in gas station robbery. A 17-year-old man was arrested after he was reportedly involved in a robbery of a gas station where the cashier was held at knife point. Alfonso Luis Cruz Chacon was charged with an aggravated robbery, a first-degree felony. The reported robbery happened at 3 a.m. November 29th at the DK located at 3660 West 8th Street, an Odessa Police Department affidavit stated. The victim, Rosalinda Tovar, reportedly told officers that two Hispanic men entered the store, showed a knife, and demanded money from the register. The men stole cash, jewel pods, and beer before leaving the scene. Video surveillance showed one wearing a red hoodie, black sweatpants, and white shoes, the affidavit stated. The second man was wearing a black jacket, black pants with a white stripe down the sides, and white shoes. Later that day, at 3:30 p.m., another robbery reportedly happened at the DK located at 1000 North Dixie Boulevard, and video surveillance showed one of the suspects was wearing a red hoodie, black sweatpants, and white shoes, and matched the suspect from the robbery at the 8th Street location. The suspect was known to the victim of the second robbery, and he was identified as 19-year-old Gabriel Breeding. Breeding claims to have been driving a blue 2008 Chrysler 300 that belonged to a friend, Chacon. Breeding was charged with two counts of aggravated robbery, a first-degree felony, engaging in organized criminal activity, robbery, a first-degree felony, and evading arrest or detention, a Class A misdemeanor. On November 30th, Chacon reported his Chrysler 300 as stolen to the Ector County Sheriff's Office, the affidavit stated. Chacon matched the description of the second suspect from the robbery that happened on 8th Street, and he was still wearing the same clothing that was seen in the surveillance video. Chacon was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on December 4th, jail records show. He had one bond totaling $50,000, and posted bail on December 5th. Breeding has three bonds, totaling $151,000, and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon. Man charged with pointing BB gun at another man. An 18-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly pointed a BB gun at another man at a gas station. Hayden De La Paz was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. Odessa Police Department officers were dispatched in reference with the subject with a gun at 4:41 p.m. December 4th near the intersection of East 5th Street and Davidson Street, the affidavit stated. Officers were also reportedly told that the actor was in a gold 2000 Ford F-150. Officers found the vehicle near the intersection of East 4th Street and Muskingum Avenue. A high-risk stop was performed, and driver De La Paz and his front passenger, Jaden De La Paz, were detained. A black C-11 BB gun was found inside the vehicle, the affidavit stated. The victim, identified as Gabriel Garza, reportedly told officers that Hayden De La Paz pointed a black handgun at him after a verbal argument that was escalating to a potential fight at a Valero gas station, located at 2000 East 8th Street. Garza completed a live lineup after signing consent and read the terms, the affidavit stated. Garza positively confirmed to officers Hayden De La Paz was the actor who pointed the gun. De La Paz was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond, totaling $50,000, and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon, jail records show. Police identify a stab victim. The Odessa Police Department has identified the 48-year-old man who was stabbed multiple times over the weekend, and a hospital spokesperson detailed the man was listed in critical condition. OPD spokesperson Corporal Steve Leschwer told the Odessa American over the phone on Monday afternoon that the victim has been identified as 48-year-old Ronaldo Oliveira Quintana. Trevor Tankersley, the director of public relations at Medical Center Hospital, stated via email that Quintana was listed in critical condition as of Monday afternoon. The reported stabbing happened at 5:10 a.m. Friday in the 1200 block of North Lee Avenue, an OPD probable cause affidavit detailed. Ronald Garcia Carballosa, 31, was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. Quintana reportedly had several stab wounds to his body, neck, and head. Those injuries were reportedly life-threatening and needed surgery. During the investigation, officers learned that the victim had made a statement to a witness that Carballosa was in a gray Nissan Altima. OPD saw a gray-colored side mirror cover lying on the ground in the parking lot next to Quintana's vehicle with a blood-like substance. OPD also reportedly found a hammer on the ground outside of Quintana's vehicle, and the head of the hammer also had a blood-like substance on it. An individual identified as Orlando Dominic Gonzalez contacted OPD in reference to his gray Altima with damage to a mirror, the affidavit stated. Gonzalez stated he loaned Carballosa his vehicle overnight, which was returned to him around 5:30 a.m. with the passenger mirror damaged. He also saw a substance he believed to be blood on the passenger side doors. Gonzalez reportedly confronted Carballosa, who stated he was involved in a fight, but for Gonzalez not to worry about it. Gonzalez stated Carballosa asked him to open the trunk of the vehicle, which he retrieved a wooden item and disposed of it. Detectives found the described item Carballosa disposed of, which appeared to have a blood-like substance on it, the affidavit stated. Carballosa has one bond totaling $50,000 and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon, jail records show. He is also being held by ICE. OA News at OAOA.com. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, December 8th, 2020. Obituaries. Judith Ann Rhodes Coleman. Odessa. With profound sadness, we announce the passing of Judy Ann Rhodes Coleman, our loving and devoted mother and friend to all whose lives she touched, on December 1st, 2020. She was 81 years young. Judy was born March 10th, 1939, in Bristow, Oklahoma, to LZ and Zula Rhodes. She is preceded in death by her parents, husband Jim Coleman, one son, Timothy Coleman, and one brother, David Rhodes. She is survived by one brother, George Ronald Rhodes of Amarillo, Texas, her daughter, Tanya Carroll, and son-in-law David of Midland, Texas, her son, Jeffrey Coleman, and daughter-in-law, Jennifer, of Staunton, Virginia, her daughter-in-law, Michelle Coleman, of Midland, Texas, and her five grandchildren, Matthew Carroll of Midland, Texas, Devin Carroll of San Marcos, Texas, Calvin Coleman of Sharpsburg, Georgia, Lauren Coleman of Midland, Texas, and Joshua Coleman of Midland, Texas. The family would like to express their gratitude towards Orchard Park of Permian Basin for their wonderful care and attention, and to hospice for the care and dignity they allowed our mother as her days ended. The family has also decided to forego a memorial service at this time for the safety of family and friends. Judy will be laid to rest at Trinity Memorial Park in Big Spring, Texas. In lieu of flowers, the family would like memorial donations made to the Alzheimer's Association. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Kenny Don Taylor, Odessa. Kenny Don Taylor, 48, of Odessa, Texas, passed away on December 3, 2020, in Grady County, Stanton, Texas. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, December 9, 2020, at Crossroads Church, with David Newton officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Kenny Taylor was born in Odessa, Texas. His parents were James and Cindy Brunson and Sherry Taylor Brunson. Kenny attended Odessa High School and studied criminal justice at Odessa College. Kenny met the love of his life, Casey Janae Taylor, in the year of 2016, and they wed in the year of 2018. Kenny was a former detective at Odessa Police Department, a former officer at ECISD Police Department, a former chief investigator at Ector County Attorney's Office, a former chief of police at Midland County Hospital District Police Department, and retired in the reserves for the Ector County Sheriff's Office. Kenny was lastly an outside sales representative at Sunbelt Rentals and on the board of the directors at Harmony Home. Kenny Taylor is survived by his beloved wife, Casey Taylor, and children Samantha Harris, Kennedy, and Reese Taylor, Ricky Benton, Kirkland and Brady Newsom, and granddaughter Riker Plymouth, and brother Chris Taylor, and nephew Christian Taylor. Pallbearers will be Reese Taylor, Brady Newsom, Jason Roberts, Jason Bowling, Kelly Cecil, Johnny Valderaz, and Clark Owen. Donations for the family of Kenny Taylor can be made to Ector County Sheriff's Department, P.O. Box 2066, Odessa, Texas, 79760. Phone number as follows, 432-335-3050. Flowers for the service can be given to Crossroads Church or Sunset Gardens Memorial for the services. The family of Kenny Taylor wish to extend our sincere thanks to friends, family, and organizations who have helped and aided in the process of remembering and honoring Kenny Taylor for the loving life he lived. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Irene McGinley Lucky, Midlothian. Irene McGinley Lucky, 89, of Midlothian, died Monday, December 7th, 2020, in Midlothian. Graveside service will be held at 10 a.m., December 10th, 2020, at Monahan's Cemetery. Arrangements are by Waxahachie Funeral Home of Waxahachie. Jason Macapagal Peely, that's spelled J-A-S-O-N-M-A-C-A-P-A-G-A-L, P-I-L-I, Odessa. Jason Macapagal Peely, 44, died Saturday, December 5th, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Ronald Keith, Pastor Yoda Bunch, Odessa. Ronald Keith, Pastor Yoda Bunch, 71, of Odessa, died Thursday, December 3rd, 2020, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, December 11th, 2020, at Faith Tabernacle Assembly of God. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, December 7th. Comment page boosts ORMC morale. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. For Danae Sims, registered nurse and critical care RN, Odessa Regional Medical Center's web forum to offer encouraging words to frontline healthcare workers couldn't have come at a better time. ORMC Director of Marketing and Community Relations, Madison Tate, said the main reason for the private webpage is that the hospital wanted to do something for its personnel. Quote, "We've had so much negativity," said Sims, who is interim critical care unit director. "We've had so much death. We've had a lot of negative response from the community, unfortunately, and we definitely need some uplifting," end quote. Sims said they are overwhelmed with patients right now. Quote, "We're just doing what we can to try to save everybody that we don't have the time that we normally would to contact families and talk with them," Sims said. Masks are also an issue. Quote, "It's a political thing. Nobody wants to be forced to do anything, so they kind of view us as pushing them. But in reality, we're just trying to get everybody better," Sims said. She added that everyone has been dealing with the pandemic for more than 8 months. Quote, "It's exhausting. People are worried about their family members, understandably. There's a lack of communication, and then I think people are just tired of it. It hasn't gotten any better," Sims said. She added that she hopes the webpage helps morale. Quote, "It's nice to hear kind words as opposed to negative ones," Sims said. Patients, she said, have mostly been grateful, kind, and scared because they're fighting for their lives. Quote, "They've all been pretty wonderful. You see them. They're there for many days. You really get to bond with them and attached," Sims said. Sims said this is a hard time for everyone with the sagging economy and people being sick. She said some of the negativity comes from people who are worried about a family member being tired of the issues with the economy and the shutdowns. Quote, "They think we're making it up," Sims said. "They just want things to go back to normal. It's completely understandable," end quote. The hospital had one critical care unit that it turned into two. With her agency and state nurses, Sims said she oversees more than 50 people currently. They sign up for 12-hour shifts, but wind up working 15 to 16 hours a day. The care they provide to patients is very intense, and they don't have time to take breaks. Sims has been an ICU nurse for 14 years, including 6 years at ORMC. She just became interim director about 2.5 months ago. She had served as a charge nurse at night for 5.5 years. Quote, "I actually worked the floor," Sims said. "I still do sometimes," end quote. She said she has seen a lot in her career, but nothing like this. Quote, "We had a really bad summer," Sims said. "We surged, and I think everybody kind of got comfortable as it got better, and then it happened again. I'm not blaming anybody. I don't really know the reasons why everything has happened, but it happened again, and it was worse," end quote. It is a strain physically and emotionally on the medical staff. Sims said there are resources that are offered, and a lot of the counseling centers offer free counseling for healthcare workers. They also vent to each other and their families. Quote, "We've really grown a lot as a team in terms of talking to each other," Sims said. Asked if there was hope with potential vaccines on the way, Sims said she thinks everybody has mixed feelings about that. Quote, "But you know, for me personally, if it will stop this, if it will stop death and help us see patients and not see people in this situation, then I'm 100% for it. We just want everybody to be okay, to get better, to not get COVID, and for the hospital to be able to care for them," Sims said. The hospitals in Odessa and Midland also care for patients from surrounding communities, so there is potential for more patients coming in who need immediate help for something other than COVID. Quote, "Our employee morale is really down right now, but more so for those specifically working in the COVID unit and all of our clinical staff that is in one way or another being affected by this pandemic, Tate said. A lot of it has to do with working incredibly long hours, the hospital being short-staffed, but also some negative comments employees have received on social media, she added. Quote, I've even heard some of our staff say that they try not to wear scrubs out in public because of the negative perceptions that might be perceived with healthcare right now. I think we just wanted to find a simple way to serve as a gateway for members of the community to share those positive messages of encouragement with our staff, Tate said. Continuing the quote, I know that for every bad comment that we see, there's probably 10 to 15 great ones that they just didn't get a chance to hear or see, so by doing this web form, we encourage the community, businesses, and individuals to just write, even if it's a brief thank you for all you do, end quote. Quote, we just wanted them to be able to see that they do have support and just try to lessen the load a little bit and make them feel encouraged and supported, end quote. Sometimes, Tate said, words of encouragement can go a long way. People just need to be told they're doing a good job and that they're appreciated. Quote, I've taken all these submissions, Tate said, December 1st. We've received quite a bit. A lot of that is due to our media outlets and some other community organizations to help spread the word. We've received quite a bit, and we've compiled it all into a private web page that we're finalizing and will send out likely tomorrow so that they can go through and read all of those kind words of encouragement. Then we'll add to it as we get those submissions. If it will just kind of serve as a reminder for them to go back if they're having a difficult day and need some positive reinforcement, end quote. At the beginning of the pandemic, Tate said people congratulated frontline healthcare workers, but that has fallen off somewhat. Quote, I think people are probably really tired of talking about COVID. It's affecting their everyday lives. It's affecting small businesses. It's really affecting everyone from the top down, so I don't blame them for being discouraged and frustrated. At the same time, we have to lift those up that are really fighting on the front lines for us and coming in every day and putting their health at risk and working extremely long hours with heavy, extreme personal protective equipment on at all times, Tate said. People need to remember that these nurses are treating their mom, their cousin, or their family friend, she said. There are 30 to 35 nurses on a COVID floor, and they have to be there 24/7 to care for patients who are very seriously ill. Tate noted that COVID patients need more care from nurses and doctors than other patients. Tate said the hospital needs to let people know this is not a normal situation. She added that this affects patients who come in with heart attacks, strokes, or who have been in a serious car accident. Quote, and if we don't have the bed capacity or the medical resources and staff to be able to take care of those traumas or emergency conditions, then more people could potentially die from this that have no contact with the virus, so it is a domino effect. I think that's what we're really trying to stress, Tate said. Tate urged the community to follow the guidelines from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the medical community. Quote, this is not over. We're in another surge, and it's pretty intense for the West Texas region out here, Tate said. We're really getting it pretty hard, and I think, if anything, if people could just acknowledge that and try to be more cautious, I would hope that we could reduce and flatten the curve a little bit to help relieve some of our medical facilities, end quote. ORMC is licensed for 225 beds, but it can operate about 130. The total hospital census was 99. The hospital was at 85% capacity as of November 30th. Quote, as of this morning, December 1st, we had 26 COVID patients, all confirmed, Tate said. There isn't much help to be found within the Stewart Healthcare, which owns ORMC and Scenic Mountain Medical Center in Big Spring. Quote, were really relying on state resources, such as contracted state nurses, to come in and help us when we're low on staffing, so we've been leaning pretty heavily on that right now, Tate said. At last report, Tate said ORMC had about 44 JRAC state resources, state nurses, on site, which includes a mix of registered nurses, respiratory therapists, certified nursing assistants, nurse practitioners, and one physician. HIV and AIDS Awareness Month. The story was written by Carol Cates, who is the chief nursing officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. The first time I really encountered HIV and AIDS was not as a nurse. It was because of Freddie Mercury. I was one of those kids who got up in the wee hours of the morning in July of 1985 to watch the Live Aid concert from Wembley Stadium in London. One of the main draws for me was Queen. I loved their music as a teenager, still do. A little more than 5 years later, in 1991, Freddie was gone. I wasn't a nurse then. I was in nursing school, and while I knew about HIV and AIDS, it never became real to me until Freddie died. Then there was Ryan White. He was just a couple of years younger than me at the time. He was the Indiana teenager who contracted HIV because of a blood transfusion, the kid who people wouldn't let their kids go to school with. Before he died, and with his dignity in death, he became the person that changed our thinking as a society about how we treat people with diseases, particularly HIV and AIDS. Since the early 90s, I have taken care of far too many people with HIV or AIDS, but it is not the same animal it was then. It is still an awful disease, one I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. But the treatments available make it manageable now for a big percentage of patients. I always think about Magic Johnson when I think about how HIV has changed. The same year that Freddie Mercury died, 1991, Magic Johnson was diagnosed, and his story is nowhere nearly complete. He has been HIV positive for nearly 30 years now, and is still going strong. December is HIV and AIDS Awareness Month, a time to think about and celebrate our successes in not conquering yet a fatal virus, but certainly in making it more manageable. As we are combating another potentially fatal virus in COVID, I think remembering our successes with HIV is even more needed. We can overcome viruses. It can take a while, but we can do it. The scope of global HIV and AIDS is significant, according to the United Nations. 38 million people are living with HIV across the globe as of 2019. A total of 75 million people have been diagnosed with HIV between 1990 and 2019. 26 million of those people have received antiretroviral ARV treatment. 1.7 million people were newly diagnosed with HIV in 2019. Here is the scary thing. It is estimated there are 7.1 million people who have HIV and do not know it. As I said earlier, we are making some real significant strides with HIV treatment. In 2004, 1.7 million people died from AIDS. That number decreased to 690,000 in 2019, about one-third of the deaths in just 15 years. The statistic that made me most want to cry is the largest single cause of HIV infections across the globe is sexual violence. Tuberculosis is the leading cause of death for HIV-positive people around the world. The drugs that have really made a big difference in the treatment of HIV are the ARV medications. Those drugs can suppress the HIV virus to the point where the virus can no longer harm the person's immune system, which means their chance of a life-threatening infection decreases dramatically. With HIV, it's not really the HIV that causes someone to die. It is that HIV converts to AIDS and a person can no longer fight off even minor infections, and it is an infection that takes their life. The other great part of ARV suppression is there is so little virus in their bodies that they can no longer infect others. If we can stop the spread of HIV with these medications, we can stop HIV. That is the aim of the United Nations 90-90-90 project. The goal of this project is to end the global AIDS epidemic by 2030. Their first goal is due soon. 90% of people living with HIV will know they have HIV by the end of 2020. 90% of all people diagnosed with HIV will receive sustained ARV treatment by the end of 2020. And 90% of people receiving ARV treatment have HIV suppression by the end of 2020. It will be very interesting to see if we can achieve that goal as a global society. I hope we do. December is the month of giving. By being aware of HIV and AIDS, we have a chance to give the whole world a gift. No more HIV.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, December 6, 2020. Fix West Texas set to open storefront by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E, at MRT.com. Fix West Texas, a nonprofit that provides spay, neutering, and other services, will soon open a brick-and-mortar location after a year of offering pop-up clinics throughout the Permian Basin. President Karen Patterson said the storefront at 5025 Princeton Avenue in Midland will be open December 15th through the 18th for a clinic. Beginning in January, they're planning to offer clinics at the space a couple of times a week. The business provides low-cost services including spay, neutering, vaccinations, microchips, and preventive medications. Patterson said the goal of Fix West Texas is to help pet owners stop having unwanted puppies or kittens that end up at the shelter, where they're often euthanized because there's more animals than the shelter can care for or find homes for. We have a lot of people who are having puppies and kittens unexpectedly. It's not like they're wanting to have a litter. Then they don't know what to do with them, and they drop them off at the shelter, and the shelter has to euthanize. Our Midland shelter, their euthanasia rate is like 40%. The nonprofit began planning over the summer to open a physical location after seeing large turnouts at their pop-up clinics. We're always having to turn people away because there's never enough appointments. That's when we started thinking, we need to be more open more frequently. And the only way to do that is to have our own spot, since we're always borrowing spots. Fix West Texas usually does one public clinic, often held at the Midland County Horseshoe, and two shelter clinics a month, according to Patterson. Public clinics are open to anyone in the community, and clinics are for shelters to get animals ready for adoption. The organization is the only one offering low-cost services in the area. They've partnered with the City of Midland and Midland County to provide $70 off vouchers for residents for spay and neuter surgeries. City residents can redeem vouchers on the City of Midland's website, while county residents can receive the discount by bringing proof of residence at the time of their appointment. Retail spending looks different in 2020. From Ray Perryman, The Economist. Like most industries, retailers are struggling to deal with the pandemic. While it may be a decent year for spending, it looks quite different, with a holiday shopping season, the likes of which we have never seen. Black Friday mall crowds were only about half the usual levels, and store visits will be down significantly for the season. Curbside and in-store pickup options have taken on new importance, offering greater safety than crowded aisles and checkout lines. Not surprisingly, online purchasing was up substantially over the Black Friday weekend and surged to a daily record on Cyber Monday. When a longer period of time is considered, spending patterns are even more promising. It remains to be seen, however, how the totals for the season ultimately unfold. There are signs that shoppers have been buying earlier, partially in response to warnings that deliveries could be delayed near Christmas. Moreover, despite the cyber surge, overall sales for the traditional beginning of the season are well below previous years. From a retailer's perspective, online purchases can involve additional costs. Shoppers often expect free shipping and can easily compare offers. Handling and packaging expenses also eat into profits. Much of what is occurring represents an escalation of trends that were already ongoing. For example, the proportion of online sales has been growing for years, but safety concerns accelerated the pace. Brick-and-mortar stores remain important, but many have long been shifting focus toward online. Major investments in both the functionality and aesthetics of remote experiences have enhanced consumer perceptions and hence purchases. Consumers are also becoming more cognizant of the social and environmental character of retail organizations. Corporate responses to COVID-19 were carefully watched for their effects on suppliers, shippers, and workers. Those whose approaches were viewed favorably were more likely to be supported by customers. Some of the changes necessitated by the pandemic will no doubt remain. Supply chain management and ensuring availability will be emphasized. Inventory practices will be revamped. More and better curbside and contactless delivery and payment systems are likely part of the new normal. Conversely, many shoppers want to see, feel, and touch their purchases and talk face-to-face with purveyors. Retailers will also need to innovate to support such preferences once the pandemic abates. As with most businesses, retailers have made major adjustments in 2020. If the positive signals regarding imminent availability of vaccines and therapeutics comes to fruition, there could well be a surge of purchasing as pent-up demand is released. Simultaneously, the lack of a stimulus package is causing some households to become increasingly financially distressed. The bottom line for retailers is yet to be determined, as it is the face of future shopping. Stay safe.
Should there have been some reaction to vaccines? Dear Dr. Roach, this is a general question about vaccine reactions. My husband and I both recently had influenza vaccines and shingles second vaccine. Neither of us had a reaction other than a red spot where the injections were done. Does this mean that they weren't effective? We're both over 75 and wonder how strong our immune systems are. Should there have been some reaction? J.D. Answer. Both the flu vaccine and the shingles vaccine are effective at reducing risk of developing their respective diseases, although neither of them is perfect. Last year, the flu vaccine was about 45% effective overall, while Shingrix, the new two-shot vaccine, has greater than 90% effectiveness in protecting against shingles, even in people in their 70s. A vaccine reaction within the first 24 hours often relates to the body's response to the preservatives and stabilizers in the vaccine. A lack of reaction to the vaccine does not mean that your body isn't responding to the key portion of the vaccine, the part that gives immunity to the virus. You should still be protected. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, December 8th, 2020, etc. Setter's pushy granddaughter is a concern. Dear Abby, because my husband and I work, I take our six-month-old to a sitter several times a week. I understand little ones tend to be mean sometimes, hitting, biting, and pushing, but in this case, it's a little different. My sitter cares for her 3-year-old granddaughter as well as her client's children, and her granddaughter pushes the littler ones. I have seen her push a 1-year-old down. I have never observed any of the other children do it, only the granddaughter. I wouldn't be so worried if my daughter were 2 and could defend herself, but she's only 6 months old. She is crawling, sitting up, and standing already, and I'm gravely worried the girl will harm my infant. I don't want my baby ending up with a head injury. What can I do to try to resolve this? Deeply concerned in the South. Dear Deeply Concerned, talk to the sitter about your concerns ask if it is possible to keep the older girls separate from the younger ones. However, the only way to be absolutely certain your little one is safe would be to change babysitters. Dear Abby, I made a friend on Facebook. Drew and I texted through Messenger, and I went to ride four-wheelers with him one day. We hit it off great. We started dating, and he moved in with me for a few months. In the beginning, Drew didn't mention he was working only part-time. After he told me he had been moved to part-time, I told him he needed to tell his boss he needed full-time or a different job. I wrote a comment to that effect on their page, and his boss texted me back saying Drew can work as much as he wants. He also said Drew hasn't worked full-time since he started working there. Well, Drew got mad at me and left. I still love him. I thought he was my soulmate. Should I keep wishing we could get back together? Feeling lifeless. Dear Feeling Lifeless, no! In a sense, you were taken for a ride, and I'm not talking about four-wheelers. Your next soulmate should be someone who is completely honest and preferably fully employed. Drew is neither. Dear Abby, I have been remarried for 4 years to a wonderful man who treats me like a queen. However, he and my 18-year-old daughter dislike each other, which causes a huge amount of stress and conflict. They fight, and I'm stuck in the middle. I don't know what I can do to resolve this problem. I love them both with all my heart. Desperate for peace. Dear Desperate, I wish you had mentioned why your husband dislikes your daughter and vice versa. Is he overbearing and trying to parent her? That is your job, not his. Your daughter is no longer 14. At 18, she is now considered to be an adult, and because the combatants are both adults, they should act like it and be civil and refrain from turning their disagreements into open warfare. Your mistake has been allowing yourself to be placed in the middle. A better solution would be to get family counseling if your daughter plans to continue to live with you. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren, write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Sagittarius and a moon in Virgo until 6:01 p.m. when the moon enters Libra. Happy birthday for Tuesday, December 8, 2020. Friendly, giving, and wholly committed, you throw yourself completely into your endeavors. You succeed in disciplining yourself without losing your spirit this year, beyond your wildest dreams. If single, you often give more than you receive, and once you correct this balance, you are hitched, ideally to a Libra or another Sagittarius. If attached, you're blessed to be with a partner worthy of your devotion. Leo gets you completely. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 3 stars. Impulsive purchases or hasty financial decisions are not favored today. Good health habits are a must. Honor your body and serve it nutritious foods. Tonight, an animal that strays to your door may belong to someone else. Check before adopting. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Your physical magnetism will be exceptionally high. A passionate yet sometimes stormy relationship is on the horizon. Love connections are likely to strike the right chord, combining excitement with harmony to equal happiness. Tonight, promise sparkles and surprises in matters of the heart. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 3 stars. At work, competitive feelings may be present. Partners exhibit a take-charge attitude. Cooperate. Teamwork is the key to success now. Family members show new talents and versatility. Tonight, interesting events, conversations, and visitors make the domestic environment more lively. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. Today indicates numerous short, enjoyable journeys. You have a touch of spring fever in the middle of this winter and won't be able to keep still for long. Family members are unpredictable, and the home requires maintenance. Tonight, a relaxing herbal soak in the bath. Leo, July 23 through August 22, 2 stars. It's time to conserve on expenses. There may be temporary tension with a loved one about finances. Remember what's really important, and be patient when working with expenses. Tonight, don't indulge in hurtful words with a loved one if money management becomes frustrating. Virgo, August 23 through September 22, 5 stars. You're known to be discriminating, meticulous, and analytical. Today, these traits are very promising reasons for recognition, a promotion, or an opportunity for added income. Tonight, prospects are bright for making love connections. This is especially true if you're traveling. Libra, September 23 through October 22, 4 stars. The stillness of deep winter is healing, remember. Guidance comes from within following a dream or deep meditation. This sets the pace for the rest of winter and rewards you with greater mental energy. Tonight, it's easier to solve problems and make wise choices. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 3 stars. If you've always wanted to write, this is the day to give it a try. Your closest relationships will require some effort. The secret to maintaining harmony is to try to see both sides. Be a very good listener. Tonight, catch up on correspondence. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 2 stars. New horizons beckon. A phase of your professional life is ending. Be receptive to changes. Hints about the specifics are in the air. Commit early to plans and invitations. Holiday events emphasizing art and music are especially worthwhile. Tonight, a temporary feeling of solitude. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 4 stars. A dream should be heeded. Your intuition is on target. Plan future travel and try creative writing. Someone from another cultural background can become a romantic prospect, or at least a new friend. Tonight, you're about to learn something valuable quite by accident. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18, 2 stars. Today illuminates options and can mark a turning point. Choices must be made regarding loyalty and commitment. Others cling to you. A situation that can be uncomfortable for the free-spirited Aquarius. Tonight, decide what you really want and what is most important to you. Pisces, February 19 through March 20, 4 stars. Friends and lovers may change roles. Travel opportunities are very promising for next summer, so you can already start to daydream. Do not let potential slip away. Do your part to let a memorable experience unfold. Tonight, learn all about a current situation. Born today, poet Horace, 65 BC, artist Lucian Freud, 1922, singer Sammy Davis Jr., 1925.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.